This is former Ring of Honor World Champion Adam Cole, baby, and you're listening to Condo on the Moon Podcast.
I'm gonna be in the Hall of Fame. That's what I heard. That's what I heard from Vince McMahon. When's it gonna happen, though? Is it gonna be this year? Is it gonna be next year? Is it gonna be 5 years from now? I should have already been in there 10 years ago. And Chris Wolder, you better come up with the right answer and confirm that I am right about this.
The only thing that I care about is, am I going to be your special guest?
No! What are you talking about?
What?
What are you talking about?
I can't escort you to the festivities.
You realize Randy isn't alive anymore, right?
What?
Like, it'd be a hologram, Walder.
Well, holograms could still work.
Yeah. Yeah, have you ever seen the Simpsons episode with the holograms? That's good. Or no, not Simpsons, South Park, sorry.
Yeah, South Park, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So get the Tupac hologram out on some hits for us. I don't know, it's been a wacky week again in wrestling. We had said on this podcast the Vince McMahon interview would probably not be all that revealing or all of that. We were a little bit wrong, although I don't think Vince said a lot, but a lot of topics did come up. We will get to all of that in the second half of the show. For the first half of the show, we're going to focus on Ring of Honor, a company, unlike the WWE, has compelling storylines. They are coming up on their biggest show of the year, Final Battle, live on pay-per-view this Sunday. Go get it. If you've been bitching about the WWE and you say you want an alternative, Ring of Honor is that alternative. And we even have a guest this week on the show. Young up-and-coming Ring of Honor star Adam Page will be on the program in just a couple minutes.
Sick.
Wow, sick. That's all. Walter, you're very short answer today.
Yeah, it's one of those days, buddy. I was stuck last night with my girlfriend watching Pitch Perfect, and I was forced to basically, whenever I wanted to make a snide comment, I had to keep it short and sweet because she would just give me like these dirty looks.
Okay.
So I guess I'm just kind of embracing that mentality where I just stick to my one-liners, my one-word answers. Thanks, Jen. I appreciate it.
Well, I don't know if she listens to our podcast, but if she does, we encourage you a little more, Walter. We need a little more from you.
A little bit more.
Don't be afraid. This is your Swiss nature. That's what it is, isn't it?
It's just because I'm so pissed off at Vince McMahon right now. I'm sticking it to the man.
Yeah, because you're Swiss, and you're also a millennial. You're both. Oh, my God. You're never going to get anywhere in this world.
I'm not getting that push, James.
No. You're not even getting in the company.
They took away my big swing. That's all I had.
Millennial and Swiss. What are you possibly going to do?
I have no use in the world anymore, let's be honest.
I don't know. Adam Page, I guess, is a millennial, but he works for Ring of Honor, where they tend to not discriminate against large groups of people, so that's good for him. He is taking on a veteran in Roderick Strong at Ring of Honor's Final Battle. What do you want to do, Chris Walder? Do you want to go to the interview first, or do you want to preview the Ring of Honor card before we get to Adam Page? It is up to you, sir.
Yeah, let's run down the card first.
Okay, we'll go through the card at the... We going bottom to top or top to bottom?
We got to go bottom to top here. We got to work our way up to the main event.
Okay, well, I am not insulting this man by making this the last or bottom match. But Artie Evans, his streak broken in pieces at the hands of Moose. These two will do battle with Veda Scott in the corner of Artie Evans. And Hathaway, Stokely Hathaway, who used to be Ramon, in the corner of Moose. So who we got in this one? I think it's fairly easy. Sorry, Artie Evans, but Moose is going to run loose all over you.
Once the streak ended, that was it for Artie Evans. I'm going with Moose as well.
Although, I must say, go seek it out. The promo Artie does for this match coming up, Final Battle, tremendous. Really something I did not expect from Artie Evans. Really good stuff.
Awesome. I need to check that out then.
You do.
Is that on YouTube?
It is probably on the ROH YouTube channel. Yeah, go look for it.
Perfect.
I don't know if this would be the next match in line, but it's the next match that I'm seeing right here. And it involves, by the way, CM Punk going to come back. Guess who he's coming back against, Chris Walder?
No, don't say it.
He is. He said it himself. If he's going to come back, he is going to do it at PWG against the Young Bucks.
Right. Because he wasn't sarcastic at all.
He likes the Young Bucks, obviously. It's clear. The Young Bucks, CM Punk, it's coming. We just don't know when. For now, the Young Bucks are teamed up with ACH. That would be Nick and Matt Jackson, by the way. With ACH. Teamed up against Cedric Alexander and The Addiction. I find this a little strange because it's kind of a mix of baby faces versus baby faces. All of them can work. I think there's no question about that. This is a tough one to pick, but I think based on the fact that Nick and Matt aren't always around, I think I'm going with Cedric Alexander and The Addiction because they're around more, and ACH gets hung out to dry because he's teaming up with the Young Bucks.
You're picking against the Young Bucks. I'll be damned.
I'm seeing who I think will win, not who I want to win. Who I'd be cheering for? Obviously, the Young Bucks.
Hey, even for the sake of this conversation, like if we were talking NBA basketball and the Raptors were going up against the San Antonio Spurs or the Clippers or something, yeah, I'd just pick the Raptors because that's the kind of fan I am.
That's you. You see, when I covered the team, I was honest. And honesty can get you in trouble. And you know about this week.
I do, yeah.
Chris Walder. I warned you about trying to get people to buy in on trading Amir Johnson. It would leave you with nothing but grief.
The people have turned on me, James.
I told you.
I'm not the most popular person in the world right now.
Sometimes you gotta know when to go with your brain and know when to go with your heart.
I need to know when to hold them and I need to know when to fold them.
No, that's Kenny Rogers the Gambler. That's different. But anyway.
I wanted to sing, damn it.
Bottom line, heart, Young Bucks, and ACH gets on there as a result because he's with the Young Bucks. But mine says The Addiction, Cedric Alexander.
Well, for the sake of being different, I'll go with the Young Bucks and ACH. Also because I just have such a hard time to pick The Addiction in any match that they're in. But, you know what, they could probably pull it off, but I'm going to go with the Young Bucks and ACH. I'm a big ACH mark.
You got problems with The Addiction, like Christopher Daniels? You know,
not at all. I think they're amazing. It's just, you know, they're that team where it's so easy to pick against them. Because there's like other, you know, there's other talents on the roster where I feel like they could probably use the win more. So I feel like that's going to be the case here.
Alrighty. Anyway, let's pick our guest match: Adam Page versus Roderick Strong. He will have Adam Page, that is, Decade members Jimmy Jacobs and BJ Whitmer. Roderick Strong no longer with the Decade. He comes alone, but comes with a ton of experience. I like Adam Page. He's a great young man, as you'll hear later on in the show. That said, I think this is a big match for Roderick Strong. I think he wins it. He defies the odds with Jimmy Jacobs and BJ Whitmer outside and Adam Page inside and gets a win.
I'm not going to pick against the guy that you're about to interview, so I'm going to go with Adam Page.
There you go. That's always safe. Go with the guest.
Exactly.
But I did not. I'm being honest. I mean, I did wish our guest luck, as I always do. But I just think Roderick Strong has a lot more to lose or gain, as the case may be. Although I think Adam Page, is, as far as the match goes, it's all on Adam Page. And if it's a great match, Adam Page will benefit, win or lose. That said, we have a four-corner survival match, which I think this has just been added. So this is just kind of a menagerie of people. We have Hansen, that's the guy with the big beard, Caprice Coleman, Jimmy Jacobs, and Mark Briscoe all locked together to battle it out. I don't know. I think Hansen, when I look at that list of four, I think he's the biggest name on there that they're looking to build. I go with Hansen in the four-way survival match.
I totally agree. I'm going to go with Hansen as well. He's what Eric Rowan would look like if he just grew out that bald head of his.
Could you imagine that tag team?
Eric Rowan and Hansen?
That would be something.
Hello.
That would be some beards, let me tell you. Then we have, of course, Unbreakable Michael Elgin, who has had the most bizarre last few months in the Ring of Honor.
Yeah, seriously.
Tommaso Ciampa, he's also kind of crazy, and we watched him attack the Young Bucks at All-Star Extravaganza and run out of the building. Both, obviously, not in the greatest of terms with ROH officials, at least storyline-wise. So Nigel McGuinness said, what the heck? We'll throw them together and we'll make a match. The former world champion Michael Elgin takes on Tommaso Ciampa. I'm going Ciampa just based on all that's been going on with Michael Elgin. I just think storyline-wise and actual-wise, I think Tommaso Ciampa probably gets the victory here.
I concur, sir, Tommaso Ciampa. I just don't know what the hell's going on with Michael Elgin these days. Play it safe again. That's what I'm doing today. I'm just going safe, 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 safe.
Here we go. Chris Walder, normally one to take chances, but not today on the picks. So we now move along to let's get our ROH tag team title match. We have the Time Splitters, Alex Jolly and Kushida, taking on our good buddies Red Dragon. Well, one of them, Kyle O'Reilly, been on the show. We have not yet had the pleasure to talk to Bobby Fish, but we assume he is a lovely person as well. That's it. Red Dragon, both IWGP Junior Tag Team Champions and ROH Tag Team Champions. This for those ROH belts. Red Dragon, to me, is on an incredible roll, and it will continue. They will retain their ROH Tag Team titles.
Of course, Red Dragon. And they're also scheduled to be on that New Japan show, correct? The one with Global Force?
They are, and they'll be defending, I think, the other belts that they have, those junior tag team championships. And you know who else is in that match? The Young Bucks. That's right. The Young Bucks will be in that match, and they'll probably win.
Got to mention those boys again.
Of course I do. You know that.
Hopefully they never align with some future faction with CM Punk, you know, like another straight-edge society where they have to shave those locks of theirs?
Oh, no, that would be great. Whatever, CM Punk and the Young Bucks, could you imagine that? That would be awesome.
That would be pretty cool.
In fact, let's bring back all of Mount Rushmore with CM Punk. Of course, none of this is happening, people. Why are you even getting me to say this stuff?
Because I know it's getting the juices flowing here. I know you would mark out completely for that.
I would. That would be the faction of all factions. It would be fantastic. It's not happening, though.
What would it be? CM Punk, Cole, maybe if Owens, the whole NXT thing doesn't work, he can come back?
That's right. We're having the whole faction of Mount Rushmore with CM Punk at the top now.
Whew, legendary stuff.
That would be good, but it's not happening.
I know.
What is happening? ROH World Television Championship. Jay Lethal, the defending champion, with Truth Martini and Jay Diesel in his corner, taking on Reborn Matt Sydal. Formerly known as Evan Bourne in the WWE world. I think this can be a tremendous match, first and foremost. That said, Jay Lethal has a lot of momentum. I just don't see Sydal as the guy to stop it. I think Jay Lethal will defend and retain his television championship.
Upset alert, I'm going with Matt Sydal. See, I guess I'm not playing it safe. I'm going to mix it up a little bit. I think Lethal has had a tremendous run, of course, but at a pay-per-view of this magnitude, one of ROH's biggest of the year, I think there needs to be at least one title change, and I think it's going to be this match.
Yeah, I will say that. There is a lot of pressure when you have a big show like this to have a title change. This would be the most logical to do that, and that said, we'll move on to the next match, which is the final match of the evening. It has the one and only friend of the program, although we didn't get him on this time before the show because apparently he was suffering with a cold, from what I heard. But he'll be 100% for Sunday. Adam Cole, baby, taking on Jay Briscoe, and my oh my, Adam Cole has done so much to just drive Jay Briscoe insane. I have no idea what to expect from this match, which is a match without honor, and Adam Cole has lived up to that in the build-up of this, kicking Papa Briscoe in the back of the head, almost getting in a scrap with Jay Briscoe at a radio station in New York City. Adam Cole, I just want him to live. That's my bottom line in this. Keep Adam safe. We want to have him back on our show. All this said, I love Adam Cole. Again, this is one of those heart-head deals for me. Heart, cheering for Adam Cole all the way. Head, because of contracts and a whole bunch of other things, Adam Cole's not becoming the ROH World Champion on Sunday. I just don't see it.
Yeah, I got to go with Jay Briscoe here. Is there any way they just write him off of ROH? Like, is there a chance like this could be one of Cole's last matches with the company?
I don't know, because usually ROH typically would make some mention of the fact it could be someone's last match. But with the type of match it is, could you do an injury angle where Cole's out and you don't know what's going to happen? Yeah, obviously you could. And his contract is running out, at least as of 3 months ago, his contract was running out sometime here in December. So I don't know if things have changed on that front or not. I guess we'll find out in short order possibly what's going to happen with Adam Cole. But let's face it, if he wins the ROH World title, that will shock a lot of people, and it will mean something has happened in terms of how long he's going to be staying on with Ring of Honor, because they wouldn't put that belt on him if he's leaving. That's obvious.
Well, we don't know all of the circumstances that go on backstage with Ring of Honor. Of course, when you went to the All-Star Extravaganza pay-per-view, we were blown away when Briscoe beat Elgin, so I guess anything is possible in wrestling.
It is, but I mean this is one of those ones where, you know, if everything stays true, it seems fairly obvious. It's kind of like WrestleMania 20. You had two guys who were leaving the company, and everybody knew it, so they weren't too happy about that match. In this case, one guy who could potentially leave the company, I don't think people are angry about it, but yeah. It is what it is. I don't know what's happening.
Well, good on them, because they're going to have a lot to live up to, because I did recently see their Ladder Wars match. I know this is like Fight Without Honor or whatever it's called, but it's going to have a lot to live up to.
Yeah, that Ladder War match is tremendous. The only thing possibly better than that, and we might be seeing this coming up, NXT, their show is coming up where Kevin Steen, now Kevin Owens, might debut the Ladder War between him and some guy named Sami Zayn, who used to be El Generico.
Yeah.
Outstanding. The Adam Cole and Jay Briscoe didn't quite live up to that, but boy, was it close. And this fight could be just as nasty, just as gruesome. I just worry for Adam. That's all. Adam, stay safe, man.
Briscoe might tear him a new uniform.
Yeah, I don't know. It could be bad for him. Bad things could happen. You don't mess with people's families. And, of course, let's keep in mind, the Kingdom, all of them, nowhere to be found. They are off in Japan. So no Maria Kanellis, no Michael Bennett, no Matt Taven. Adam Cole is doing this all alone.
God help his soul, man.
Yeah. He's a brave young man, that Adam Cole. We love him. Anyway, another Adam is Adam Page, and he will be taking on, as we mentioned, Roderick Strong, and had a good chance to talk with him about his whole year in ROH and being new to the company and having just a great storyline for somebody who's a young guy coming into the fold there in ROH. And he's had a big year, and this is obviously, as he admits in this interview, the biggest match of his wrestling career, and I would tend to agree with him. Roderick Strong is no joke, and one of the best guys going in that Ring of Honor company. He's held all the titles. He's quite the professional wrestler, so quite a challenge for young Adam Page coming up this Sunday. Welcome, and we are talking Final Battle. Our road to Final Battle continues. We've had a couple of great guests along the way. We talked to Kyle O'Reilly from the Tag Team Champions Red Dragon, and a couple weeks ago we caught up with Jay Lethal, the ROH Television Champion. And now this week we get a chance to talk with Adam Page, who has been part of the Decade for most of 2014, all of 2014, and he has a big match coming up on this card going against a former member of the Decade now, I guess, Roderick Strong, and we'll get into your match, but first and foremost, Adam, thanks for joining us, and just your thoughts on the year it's been for ROH in 2014, because I know in our podcast we've had a chance to talk with a lot of the older guys who've been part of the company for a while, and their impressions of how big this year has been for Ring of Honor have been just huge. For someone who's newer to the company, your impressions of how 2014 has been for the company as a whole?
Man, 2014 has been awesome. It really has been a big year, and like, you know, I don't feel like I have the right to say that because it's been my only year, you know what I mean? But you know, it really has been stuff with New Japan, traditional, you know, television pay-per-view. We've got a lot of new TV markets, and you know, I don't really know the figures on like how many homes we're actually in, but I know that we just started getting TV where I live, you know, like maybe a month ago, and it's going on TV here. And then a lot of people that I, you know, just random people that I know from college and things like that who live across the, you know, the states, the stuff are now hitting me up and saying, oh, I saw you on TV and this and that and this. So we're getting a lot of exposure and a lot of really cool stuff happening. And as far as, like, guys coming in who weren't here at this time last year, and the growth of people who were here at this time last year, the growth to where they are now, it's just been a really good year, really good year, with not much downside.
Yeah, and one of the things about Ring of Honor that I've talked about with pretty much all the guests that I've had, is Ring of Honor is a company that, you know what, it always keeps finding new talents like yourself. It always is constantly evolving. I mean, in this year, Kevin Steen moved on from this company, who was a huge star in Ring of Honor, but they're always finding the next stars, and they're always moving forward. And as someone who is fairly new to the company, it's got to be a motivating factor that this company has always been willing to find the next talents and do so much. I mean, Ring of Honor, when you look at the history of guys that have been part of this company, it's very impressive when you look at where a lot of them have gone since, and even with the talent that's currently there.
Yeah, man, absolutely. They're always, always keeping their eyes open for stuff. And one of the big things they've done the past, you know, year or two has been those camps. And you know, I don't mean to sound like a shill for the camp or anything, but I'm going to shill for the camp because I did two of the camps before I signed with Ring of Honor. And if it hadn't been for that, you know, with as many people who are coming to Ring of Honor now, they probably wouldn't have known me. You know what I mean? So those camps are huge in being a device to sift through all of the talent. And then actually getting to stop and look at them. But because of the nature of the beast, you know, our high turnover rate and things like that, and this year losing Steam, and I'm sure, you know, in the past 12 months, there have been others that, you know, just slip in my mind, but constantly, you know, high turnover and things like that, they're always looking for new people, and people are always coming to them, and, you know, if anybody's listening who's interested in doing something remodel or stuff like that, or, you know, just wants a really good seminar, really good feedback, you know, as a wrestler, those Ring of Honor camps are definitely the way to go, and really they're one of the only ways you're going to get seen. There's so many people.
Yeah, and correct me if I'm wrong, but with the company growing like we were talking about earlier, ROH is going to be a more desired place to be for wrestlers that are working on the independents and stuff like that, because it is seen as that next level. It's a lot different, and it's growing in its profile and its reach and all that. So, you know, it's going to be a tougher place to get your foot in the door, I would imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, with each time we grow, then it gets harder and harder for someone to get here, because we've set ourselves up on this pedestal, and then everything that we do to improve ourselves, okay, now this is our standard. Now this is our stand. So, you know, it's not just raising the bar against people on the outside to get in. It's raising the bar for everybody in the company as well. And it's, you know, it's an internal competition as well. So, but that's good. That's good. You need competition to thrive.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's one of the things we've talked about with a number of guys is the fact the way Ring of Honor is booked, it would never seem out of the question or crazy for anybody that's part of that roster pretty much to challenge for a title on a given night. Like, it wouldn't seem out of the blue or out of strange for that to happen, whereas in other promotions, you would never see that kind of balance from the top to the bottom of the roster where every person is striving to achieve those championships and be a part of that mix. I think everyone's storyline at some point obviously drives towards getting a title or succeeding as part of the company.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the, you know, that kind of that depth or believability that, you know, this guy can face this guy and believing that either one can win. I think that's a product of our product having a lot of wrestling. I mean, that's what it's about, you know. Certainly, you know, there are other things going on, but when it comes down to it, it's about wrestling, and everybody gets a chance to go out there and show what they can do. And so because of that, I think that, you know, from a fan's perspective, you could watch it and you could really believe, you know, oh yeah, this guy actually could beat this guy, you know, whatever, because you've seen them both do their thing, and you know they're both good, because there's not a person on the roster who isn't good. And you know that, you've seen it. So you can really believe, I mean, you know, I look at the roster and I'm thinking, like, God, I could believe all of these guys getting a world title shot and maybe winning, you know what I mean? And I think that's a product of just seeing these guys wrestle.
Yeah, well, let's get into your storyline specifically. It kind of mirrors, like, reality in a way, because you're part of the decade, you're this young guy, they brought you in to teach you their ways, but in some senses, I guess, in reality, that's probably true, too, being part of this group with Roderick Strong, who's a long-time part of Ring of Honor, Jimmy Jacobs and BJ Whitmer. That has to be such a great learning experience for you, and also, in a way, kind of a privilege, because the way this is all set up, it's one of those storylines where you look at it, it's designed to get some new guy to get up to another level, and that new guy is you.
You know, I've done several podcasts in the past week or so, and that's one thing that I always make sure that I say. This entire thing with the decade has been about as real as it gets. And that's when you really get, you have a good product, is when people are true to their characters. You know, the things that you see on TV and that with the decade, it's all real. And, you know, there aren't that many exaggerations. There aren't any things that aren't believable, because it is really real. And, you know, you look at it, and I remember when somebody was telling me about, you know, being in the decade, you know, months and months and months ago as a young boy, and initially it was a little bit kind of like, I was apprehensive, you know, whatever. But then I realized this is a great opportunity. These are three guys who have been here, you know, 10 years or more apiece, and this is a really good learning opportunity, and it's a good opportunity for me. It's a good place for me to be. So that, as far as, you know, my interpretation of the whole thing is real. And then all the other characters, you know, in this group, the dynamic, the way that they interact with each other, everything, I mean, it's completely real. I mean, there's nothing really too out there about it. It's real, and I think that's what makes it good. Yeah. I'm really proud of it.
Yeah, and that's when wrestling really clicks, when you can blur that line between the reality and the storyline, and you're not really sure as a fan. I think that's when wrestling is at its best, and some of the greatest feuds in wrestling history have had that kind of attachment to them, where there's just that just basic believability factor to them, and I think that's a good point. And another thing, like this, there have been angles like this before, like in the WWE, one of the most famous ones, you get Evolution. It's Ric Flair and Triple H, but that was set up to make something out of Batista and Randy Orton, and obviously it did. And I for you, now you're getting to face Roderick Strong in a one-on-one match, and you were on the last live pay-per-view as well in a six-man, but this is a one-on-one contest, a bit of a different deal and a bit of a bigger deal for you. I've heard Roddy talking on different interviews as well, getting ready for Final Battle. He's a guy that wants to go out there, no matter who he's in the ring with, and steal the show. For being the other guy as part of that, you got to love to be in the ring with someone with that mentality and that experience.
Absolutely, man. I'm looking forward to it. This is going to be one of the biggest matches of my career. And, you know, you mentioned the last pay-per-view. I wasn't actually on that pay-per-view. I wasn't even in the six-man match. I was at ringside with BJ and then later at ringside with Roddy. So in 6 months, I went from being Roddy's bitch towel boy or whatever, and now I'm wrestling him at this pay-per-view. So you can imagine, you know, in 6 months, all of that happening, and then having, you know, a headline match on this pay-per-view, how big that is for me, how exciting it is for me. And it's really exciting because I'm completely comfortable and confident about it. You know, it's not one of those things where I'm nervous or anything like that. I'm very confident in how this is going to be. And that's really what makes it great.
Yeah, and recently on our ROH television leading up into Final Battle, you were cutting promos. You're talking on the mic. BJ Whitmer is now more respectful to you and you're more equals, and it is so different if you go back 6 months in the storyline to where you were at, where if people were only thinking in the moment, they're thinking, Adam Page, I don't know if he made the best decision going with this decade. I mean, look at him. He's kind of getting slobbed around and he's not getting to shine, but now you've reached that point where you are getting to shine, and that's got to be a tremendous feeling for you as a performer.
Absolutely, man. And I really wish there was, like, without it being completely too tedious, but I wish there was a way that you could go back and look at every single moment that we've had as a group as the decade and look at those subtleties. You know, you mentioned, like, people look and say, oh, this is a bad decision, and oh, they're beating him around, and, you know, he's never going to get anywhere doing this, and, you know, how, like, BJ ends up kind of taking me under his wing more than anybody else. I really wish there was a way to go back and look at those really fine details of just, like, a moment of eye contact or, you know, or just a gesture or something like that, just little tiny little things that have been, you know, interspersed through the past, you know, 8 months or whatever, but have really built up to something. And I don't even think that's something like you can't perceive it as a whole right now because it unfolded after 8 months or so. But if you could really know the amount of detail as far as, like, you know, body language and gestures and things like that, the tiny little details that went into making this story, I think it's amazing.
Yeah, because, I mean, when you first came into the company, you were as babyface as you could get. You came out there, you're a good-looking guy, you had the trucker hat on, you know, you looked like the classic babyface guy, and to go from that to where you are now, it's been night and day, and to make that transition has to be a tremendous amount of fun. I know we've had Adam Cole on the show a couple of times, and we talked about how Adam made that transition when he won the ROH World Championship, and that slow progression into being this bad guy. That's got to be something fun to do just as an individual. It's got to keep you really invested in your character.
Yeah, man, and it's good. You know, you said I was just about as baby face as I could be, and that's the truth about it. And, you know, you're always told to watch the old stuff, and, you know, oh, you know, you need to look back at Ricky Steamboat and this and that, and, you know, he'd be a good baby face, and that kind of thing. But the more I did that, and the more I thought about it, the more I realized the white meat baby face that I was, that's dead. For the most part. You know what I mean? I mean, you can look around and you can find examples of successes, but a lot of that is kind of lost. And that's what I realized, you know, like, something's got to change. And then to progress to where I am now is great, too, and it's, I love doing what I do now because it's a great way to feel comfortable. It's a great way to vent frustrations and emotion and things like that, and I love what I'm doing now.
Yeah, and that, in fact, actually, when we talked with Jay Lethal, we talked about that because Jay obviously made that transition as well, but Jay had been just, and you mentioned the name Ricky Steamboat. Whenever you think babyface, it's a name that comes up for everybody, and Jay was kind of like that in ROH, and I know he's just had a great time making that transition to heel, and it is tough to be that white knight in shining armor. I don't think that plays anymore with wrestling fans, because it's just like wrestling always is trying to imitate society in some ways, and in society that white knight character really doesn't exist out there anymore.
Yeah, and you know, I thought about it, you know, as I really got into wrestling, you know, 2 and 3 and 4 years in, I always felt like, you know, I want to be the kind of wrestler that as a person, like if I knew myself as the wrestler as a person, I would like myself and I'd want to hang out with myself. And you know, that, you know, I want to be like somebody that I would respect and look up to. And the more, you know, the more time went on, the more I thought about it. It's like, you know, I don't think the person that I want to hang out with and the person that I respect, you know, as a person with moral fiber and you know, that kind of thing, that's not the kind of person I want to sit down and watch be dealt with somebody and wrestle. You know, so yeah, that whole white meat baby face, it just doesn't, you know, work anymore. You know, people don't want to sit down and see, you know, a regular good old guy like they see every day on TV. They want to see something different. They want to see somebody beat the hell out of each other. And, you know, yeah, I just don't think it works.
I don't think that would be a problem with you facing Roddy, because Roddy goes full bore no matter what, who he's in the ring with. So I think people will be beaten up in your match, and you'll try and get your fair share in, I'm sure. But when you look at Final Battle and what it means to this company, for lack of a better term, it is ROH's WrestleMania, and with it being on live pay-per-view now and in New York City, one of the huge markets for ROH, this weekend has to be a little bit more special than every other weekend when you guys get together for Ring of Honor, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, Final Battle last year was a big deal, and there was an air of, you know, this is a special night as soon as you walk in the building. And, man, this Final Battle already has that feeling. It had it a week ago or 2 weeks ago, you know what I mean? So I can't imagine how I'm going to feel Sunday.
Yeah, the build-up's just been huge, and obviously, first time for Final Battle getting on live pay-per-view and all of that, and I know everyone was really excited going into the first live pay-per-view. Is there a sense in the locker room of kind of, you know, we did it the first time, now we want to kind of establish it and build on the success that was the first ROH pay-per-view on live pay-per-view. Try and spit that out. I'm a mess today. I apologize.
You know, I shouldn't say that. There's a collective, a sense of, like, collective achievement. You know, I talked about there being competition, you know, both outside of Ring of Honor, with Ring of Honor, and competition within Ring of Honor. But it's, when we have shows like this or moments like this, things happen like this, like our in New Japan and our last pay-per-view and then this pay-per-view certainly as well, there's a sense of collective achievement. So while there's competition, at the end of the night when you leave, you know, everybody feels like they're a part of something really special. And I think that is also just as key as competition is. I feel like that's also just as key to success. And I think we've definitely got both of those keys, competition and that collective sense of, you know, achievement when we do something like this.
Yeah, and that's something Adam Cole's really stressed when he's been on the show, this idea that Ring of Honor, it's really a team effort, and there's really that camaraderie within the locker room, and everyone, although there's that atmosphere of everyone wants to go out and steal the show, everyone is still kind of rooting for everyone else. And I was at All-Star Extravaganza, and you could notice off to the side, a lot of the wrestlers were up there in the stands, they were watching everybody else's matches, and everyone just seems invested in not just what they're doing, but what everyone in the company is doing.
Yeah, you know, all of us, it's a small locker room, and all of us, you know, met each other even before we got here for the most part, and then now, you know, we're peers, and now we're all here together. So all these guys on the roster, they're all your peers, and, you know, if I don't steal the show, but my buddy over here does, well, I'm not upset. You know, I'm upset, certainly upset about, you know, whatever, but I'm also happy for them, and I'm happy for everybody else in the locker room who made, you know, show a success. So, you know, there's definitely, like, a sense of, you know, pride in what everybody in the locker room does.
Yeah, and aside from your match yourself, what is the match that Adam Page is going to be peeking out and trying to get a look at that's on this card?
Definitely, Colton Briscoe. I mean, these dudes have been fighting about this thing for over a year now. It's a fight without honor. And, you know, I don't think we're going to see a murder, but I think we're going to come just short of it.
Yeah, that's not legal on pay-per-view, I don't think, murder, but, you know.
I don't think so. I don't think it is. So we'll probably come just shy of that. So, I mean, you know, it's going to be like watching a car crash. I don't know how I'm going to feel about it, but definitely going to be watching that. Man, the whole card, man, there's so much good stuff. You got Lethal and Sydal. You've got Elgin and Ciampa. That will certainly be interesting. You've got a crazy six-man tag. You got, there's a ton of more stuff going on. I'm sure I'm neglecting to mention some of the matches. I'm going to watch Moose and RD. I'm going to watch that, too.
Yeah, that should be interesting because the streak has ended. That has died now, and that was something that Ring of Honor fans really got behind. And, you know, it's funny because Ring of Honor, you talked about your long storyline with the decade, and there was that long storyline with the new streak. Ring of Honor kind of has this reputation outside of people that follow it as being strictly about in-ring action, and certainly it is that. But I find, especially this year, there have been a lot of long-standing storylines that have been part of the ROH mix, and it's much more evident now that you're seeing a lot of consistency in what goes on from show to show.
Yeah, and I think that's due in part to a lot of hard work by everybody, you know, from the top down. A lot of hard work and a lot of passion into what we do. You know, if nobody was passionate, we'd just go out there and have some good matches and call it a night. But everybody is so passionate about not just what they do, but what other people do. You know what I mean? Like, I always I have input on what other people think. You know what I mean? What other people are doing, I want to put my input in, and, you know, other people feel the same about me, and there's a collective sense of, like, pride and, like, wanting to do this right and, you know, do something awesome. And I think that has created, yeah, you've got these long, intricate, yet meaningful stories that are coming out now.
How easy is it to blend into that locker room? Because obviously you're fairly new to that company. When did you first feel comfortable? Was it right away, or did it take some time?
It takes a while. I'm a little bit of a loner kind of guy myself, so it takes me a lot longer than somebody like a big mouth like ACH. Don't tell him I said that. I'm really cool with everybody. And, wrestlers as a whole, it's just one big family. I could go to a show in the middle of nowhere and not know any of these dudes from anybody. Never met them before. And within 5 minutes, they're like somebody I've known my whole life. And there's just something special that all of us share that, it's just like a family. So there's never a sense of it definitely wouldn't be like walking onto a different job, like showing up for a new job at the plant or whatever. It's never like that. There's always a sense of, just like family.
Well, we wish you a lot of luck. Obviously, Roderick Strong is one hell of an opponent for you, and I'm sure you will give him all that you have. And you have BJ Whitner probably in your corner too, so he'll be there to help out as well. And good luck to you, and hopefully have a great match, and everything works out for you, win, lose, or draw, and for ROH as well. Final battle, a big deal, obviously. This show is a huge event for Ring of Honor, and I think even more special this year with it being on live pay-per-view for the first time.
Absolutely, man. If you're in New York area, are they sold out at this point? They might be sold out. I don't know.
They're close. They're close.
If they're not already sold out, go buy your tickets right now. But if you're not in the New York area, then definitely check it out on pay-per-view because, it's a big night for Ring of Honor. It's a big night for Adam Page. It'll be a big night for Roderick Strong. He loses to Adam Page. And it'll be a big night for wrestling, not just Ring of Honor, but for professional wrestling as a whole. It really will be. It's definitely something you don't miss.
I agree wholeheartedly, and Ring of Honor has had a great 2014. I think that goes without saying. And this is the big closer. This is the last event of 2014 for Ring of Honor, Final Battle. And it's always been traditionally a great show. And this one should be no different. And, good luck with everything, Adam Page, because you're one of those young up-and-comers that is starting to make some waves in this company. And we wish you all the success in the world.
Thank you, man. You have a good night.
This is Kyle O'Reilly, one half of the Ring of Honor World Tag Team Champions, and one half of the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Champions. You're listening to Condo on the Moon podcast. Keep it real.
So that was Adam Page. We wish him luck and all the best in his match with Roderick Strong and his future in Ring of Honor, as he is one of the up-and-coming guys in that promotion. So, as we said, we encourage you, Ring of Honor, Final Battle, on pay-per-view. Go out, seek it out, spend your money, support ROH, because, quite frankly, they put on a great product. And for all the complaining that people do about WWE, hey, here's an alternative that you can try out and see what you think of it and put some money into it. So, that is my ringing endorsement for Ring of Honor, Final Battle. Go check it out.
And from what I hear, Ring of Honor really likes Swiss people, so I'm all on board with their pay-per-view.
They did have that Claudio Castagnoli guy. Was he billed from Switzerland at the time?
Well, he sure looked like a Swiss guy, all glammed up. That's how we roll.
He did. Swiss people. Let's get right into it. Vince McMahon, Stone Cold Steve Austin, we had said on this podcast, I wasn't confident we'd get a lot out of Vince from this interview.
Yeah.
And I think we didn't necessarily get a lot out of him, although Stone Cold Steve Austin pressed him into going into a variety of topics, one of which instantly made me think of you as Stone Cold brought up what seems to be Stone Cold's favorite wrestler, Antonio Cesaro. And Vince McMahon's reasons for why Cesaro has not gotten over, one of them being he's Swiss. Damn you Swiss people, why are you so Swiss, Chris Walder?
Bottom, why am I so Swiss? Is that what you just asked me?
Yeah, well, that's
the best question I've ever been asked in my entire life. I'm not even exaggerating. Why am I so Swiss? Well, James, I was born on a farm in Zurich, Switzerland, next to a bunch of cows. I had
was there chocolate there?
Yes, that's what we were making. The cheese, the chocolate. We even had a little section where we would bust out swatches and Swiss Army knives. And, you know, we would yodel at dawn.
Stone Cold likes the Swiss Army knives. He's a big fan of those.
Yeah, does he use those on Redneck Island?
He might, but he encourages everyone to have one.
So yeah, they are very useful.
He's supporting your nation. Stone Cold could be a national hero, while Vince McMahon, on the other hand.
Well, we do need a new flag, because a lot of people always confuse it for the Red Cross. So maybe we need to mix it up a bit.
So maybe like an Austin 316 on the cross or something?
Or just like a middle finger plus a couple of Speedweisers on the side.
Actually, that could be the flag for Vince McMahon, but in all seriousness...
It could be, yeah.
We've been joking around, but as someone of Swiss descent, how offended were you by that?
I had a good chuckle at it, to be honest. I didn't think Vince McMahon was going to be so harsh against the Swiss people. But and especially as harsh as he was against Cesaro, because talking about how he doesn't kind of relate to the fans and how the fans can't invest in him, well, you know, it's hard to buy into Cesaro when you take away his moveset, you give him the world's worst entrance music, you have him lose to literally everybody. So maybe Vince McMahon needs to look in the mirror and embrace his Swiss side more.
I don't think he has any Swiss in him. Irish is his background.
The rich side could be Swiss.
The one thing, we'll get into all the various different topics that Vince McMahon talked about, but I think the most damning thing in this interview came right off the top. When Vince McMahon was asked about the show that he just worked on, He said he thought that was a very good show. I watched that same show. I thought it sucked. There is the biggest problem for wrestling fans right there. Because Vince McMahon looked at a show that I looked at that I thought totally sucked. And he thought was not only acceptable, but he thought it was very good.
It was crap. And Vince McMahon even acknowledged the fact that he uses ratings as an indication to see if fans are pleased with his product. And unfortunately, the only way things are going to change is if viewers take the remote and they just press up on the channel, you know? Like, they're going to have to watch something else. And if not, then Vince is going to keep looking at the numbers every week and say, well, I guess what we're doing works because we're getting millions and millions of viewers. But, you know, like Monday Night Raw this past week, it was the biggest piece of garbage, you know, and which is saying something, because we've had some really bad Raws in the last couple of months. But for Vince to sit there and say he enjoyed it, he's clueless.
Well, he thought it was a very good show, and I thought someone summarized it very nicely on Twitter. It was the most boring pre-show to the Vince McMahon Stone Cold podcast that they could have possibly put on.
Good point, yeah.
And it felt that way, I mean, quite honestly. But I found it, you know, it was kind of bizarre, and it was kind of like, you know, that's the problem right there. If he thinks that was good, I mean, I don't know where we go from here, because I thought that was one of the worst shows I've ever seen. Like, at the end of the day, you can talk about the individual things, like Cesaro, like CM Punk, like, you know, the Jim Ross firing, like all the stuff that comes up in this interview. But at the core of it, I think the most important thing was right there, off the top. How do you think the show was tonight, Vince? I thought it was very good. Really? I mean, I didn't. Like, and that's the biggest takeaway for me from this whole interview.
Well, what else would he realistically say, though? Like, is he going to sit there in front of millions of people and acknowledge the fact that his show wasn't very good? I mean, even if you don't believe it, you kind of just have to express that.
Yeah, I get your point, but he seemed to be overselling it. Like, you know, I think there was a much better way to give a shorter answer and move on. And I thought, based on what Vince said, I thought, I didn't think he was BSing. I thought he really believed that.
Well, like I said, the man is clueless. He's out of touch with what the 2014 wrestling fan wants, and what they want is the complete opposite of what we got on Monday night.
Yeah, I mean that was one thing he seemed adamant in trying to disprove, but I think he actually proved it in trying to disprove it. His rant about millennials was off the charts. I mean, you are a millennial, Chris Walder. Are you not motivated to grab that brass ring and reach for the top? What is wrong with you and your entire generation? Vince McMahon clearly sees you as a bunch of slackers.
We're just not motivated enough, James. We don't want to be these big stars and these very important people. All we care about is getting by and getting a paycheck every week and just living an affordable, acceptable life. We're not like back in the 90s when everyone wanted to be at the very top of the company and wanted to be superstars and megastars and ultra stars. We just don't have that drive, James.
You're just happy to be here, aren't you, Chris Walder?
I really am. That's why I'm happy playing second fiddle to you, buddy. I'm never going to want to overtake this podcast. I am I'm comfy. I got my comfy chair. I'm just sitting back and being your number two.
Wow, you know, if they ever want to add a fourth member to the New Day, I think you'd fit in well with those guys.
I'm optimistic, buddy.
That's what I mean. I think you'd fit in well.
It's a new day for Chris Walder. Everybody, new day, new day.
But in all honesty, what the hell was that?
What, the new day?
No. What Vince McMahon had to say about millennials in his roster, basically burying the entire roster with four exceptions that he spit out, which will shock nobody, in the three members of the Shield and Bray Wyatt, the rest of the roster, a bunch of slacking millennial jerks. That's Vince McMahon's basic like thoughts on his roster.
But no one is going to have the guts to come out and say, like, screw you, Vince. Because that's essentially what he did. He buried everybody who wasn't, like, his crop of up-and-coming future main eventers, like the Shield guys and Bray Wyatt. How is everyone else supposed to feel, you know? I would feel like crap.
But you know what? In Vince McMahon's strange mind, I think that's exactly what he wants to happen. He wants someone to come up to him and say, screw you, Vince, how dare you insult me like that?
Well, that's kind of what Stone Cold Steve Austin pointed out, too. He said he was talking to a couple of guys in the locker room before the podcast, and he wanted to challenge everybody and, you know, kind of go that extra mile. And if Vince McMahon didn't do it, maybe Stone Cold Steve Austin's words kind of sunk in a little bit more, but I mean, it's hard for me to kind of disagree with both guys. I mean, there are probably a bunch of superstars right now who are fine with the role that they're in, but how is the WWE supposed to thrive when no one really wants to be the top guy when we're getting the same top guys kind of going in and out for the last several years?
In defense of the millennials and younger folks on said roster, I think when you look back at two people, you kind of see why this roster isn't all that motivated to do much of anything. Zack Ryder, remember him? Got himself over in just over a year, worked his butt off, and did all he could possibly do as a talent to get over. He ends up getting buried and put right back where he started from, and I think that was a morale killer for a lot of guys who are on the lower tier of this card, and any hope they ever had of getting to the top. And then I think the guy we talked about last week, CM Punk, the famous promo, he says it in the promo. I've grabbed so many of Vince McMahon's imaginary brass rings, and where did he end up? He ends up taking his money and sitting home in Chicago realizing he can't change this because it's so fundamentally broken, it's beyond changing. And I think when you look at those two stories, hey, why would you be motivated in this company if you've been here a while?
Well, those are the two prime examples right there. Another guy that I might throw into the mix is Dolph Ziggler. someone whose run has fluctuated so many times that you don't really know where he is. Is he a main event guy? Is he a mid-card guy? We just saw him at Survivor Series defeat three Authority members to win the main event of the show, and now we're going into TLC. It's going to be announced on SmackDown. He's fighting for the Intercontinental title against Luke Harper. Is that kind of a downgrade from, you know, like the big moment he had at the last show? It's what are they doing with this guy?
Yeah, it's up, down, all around it. And, I mean, positioned as John Cena's friend, which is never good.
That's a suicide mission right there.
Ask Zack Ryder.
Ask the Usos, ask all these guys.
Yeah, it doesn't work out well for you. But it's easy for the Wyatts and for the Shield to be that aggressive go-getters that they are, because they've never had to deal with the failure and the nonsense that's gone on there. They came in with a fresh take on the world, I think. And for that matter, I think all the guys that come from NXT are going to have that kind of fresh coat of paint thing, where if they do come full steam ahead, I think they'll mull through this entire roster because no one will stop them.
Well, it's easy when you're in developmental and WWE officials can kind of mold you to their liking. And we see all these guys coming up from the independent scene, like the Nevilles and Zanes of the world. And, you know, there's a reason why they're down in NXT for as long as they are, because it gives management a time to really judge what they can bring to the main roster. And when they do get to the main roster, they can kind of get that Shield-esque push, because you know what you're going to get.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at how they're building Kevin Owens / Kevin Steen, this flies right in the face of what Vince is talking about. Because the promos for Kevin Owens, I mean, my God, 14 years of my life have come to this moment. Like, that sums it up, like, so crystal clear of how motivated a guy is to succeed. And there's a guy getting ready to debut that has said it. I mean, I think it's brilliant. I think it's perfect. I think, you know, Kevin Steen, or Kevin Owens, is going to be just a monster when he gets here.
And the fact, like, his latest promo on the last NXT show was perfect, because what you did was you put him in this kind of the same group as all of these other guys that came up from the independent scene. You brought up Seth Rollins, the fact that you used to wrestle him, the fact that you teamed with Sami Zayn and he was one of your best friends. You wrestled Adrian Neville. You tag-teamed with Daniel Bryan. That makes Kevin Owens seem important. Like, me and you both know how good Kevin Steen, Kevin Owens is. But to the common fan who looks at this guy, and, you know, he might look a little bit generic, you know, nothing really special, but you put him in that category, okay, now you have something here. And when he comes up at the TakeOver Our Evolution show, then you're going to really give it to him.
Yeah, I mean, he's just a guy. He's the closest thing to come into this company to Stone Cold Steve Austin since Stone Cold left. I really believe that. Like, Kevin Steen, at his best, is that common man. Like, he really taps into that with people. And if they let him be that, there's going to be no stopping Kevin Steen.
I could see your point. I would argue that maybe Dean Ambrose is closer to an Austin than Owens is.
I don't think Dean Ambrose is Roddy Piper. He's just crazy nuts. I don't think Dean Ambrose is the common man. I don't think he's that at all. I think part of the appeal of Dean Ambrose is he's not common. He's absolutely crazy nuts off his rocker.
Well, he has the anti-authority thing going for him. Don't get along with anybody, don't trust anyone kind of vibe. So, I mean, I can make the argument. But, yeah, I see that in Owens as well.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting once Kevin Owens arrives there in NXT. And, you know, if they do this the right way, I think they'll start his career off with a bang. And he'll be feuding with another former ROH star to kick off his career in WWE and NXT, and I think that will be outstanding television.
Leave it to the NXT guys to overshadow what's going to be the last pay-per-view of the year for WWE 3 days later, because I really do feel that our Evolution is going to blow TLC. Actually, it's not TLC anymore. They changed the bloody name.
Oh, yeah. Is that real? I saw
it
that
really
today.
Is. Yeah, it really is.
It's now Tables, Ladders, and Chairs and Stairs.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
Yeah, oh, my, indeed.
I mean, I don't know about this company. Like, I really don't. There's my disgust from what went on with CM Punk and my just utter belief and having zero faith that this company can actually get it and do the right things for themselves. The combination of those two things, I've never been more down on the WWE in I don't know how long. Like, I really have so little faith in the product right now.
It's just little moves like this that feel so unnecessary. Like, the stairs match in general is just the dumbest gimmick match ever, but to add it to the title of the pay-per-view less than 2 weeks before the pay-per-view, I mean, come on, WWE.
Oh, no, the chairs gimmick match is worse than the stairs gimmick match, but that's not the point.
Well, they're both terrible.
Yeah, the point is, and we'll get more into this next week than we will this week, but when you compare the two shows and what we're getting, it's going to be one of those cases where, again, the NXT show, I think on paper, should be 10 times better than the TLC.
And there's only 4 confirmed matches, so that tells you something right there.
Yeah, and one massive debut that we just finished talking about in Kevin Owens. I think, you know, that's going to be huge, whereas what's the hook to TLC? Oh, John Cena might not be number one contender? Oh, no!
That's a blessing. That's a great thing.
Yeah, but even if it, one way or the other, does it matter? Like, I'll tell you one of the most damning lines that really killed John Cena for a lot of people. At least it did for me. He one of those times he ended up giving up his title shot to Ryback, and one of his justifications in doing that was title shots come and title shots go. And for John Cena, that's true, but for a lot of other people in this company, that's not true, and his just blatant disregard for what a title shot meant and how he devalued it, I think, just damaged the whole entire frigging company.
It's not enough of a grab for me to really give a damn about TLC. Like, I understand, you know, you need a main event, although I don't feel that John Cena versus Seth Rollins is going to close the show. I'd rather see Ambrose and Wyatt just because it's a TLC match. Why would you have that go on before a regular old tables match that really no one...
Because it's John Cena.
Yeah, but if they do close with Rollins Cena, then they would have to have Lesnar show up, but they're not going to waste a date on a two-minute appearance so he can F5 Cena. You know what I mean? So I would rather see Ambrose and Wyatt, but then again, it's like, do I really care about that match either? Probably not.
It's a terrible card. I mean, it's just like, it's awful.
And we got to break that sucker down next week, man.
We don't have to. There's no one holding a gun to us.
No, I mean, we pretty much have to. Let's be fair here.
No, we don't.
We can figure out for an hour what the hell a stairs match is.
It's a match where you hit each other with stairs. I can figure it out right now for you. It's not that hard.
They'll hang a briefcase above a set of stairs, and whoever climbs the stairs like is number one contender or something. That would be pretty hilarious. No. I brought that up today. People had a good chuckle. Who can climb the two stairs to grab the briefcase?
The Big Show, that would be his whole fit test, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that's some cardio right there, buddy.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. WWE, I'm at a loss right now. I really don't care. I just want to focus on, hey, Final Battle's this weekend, and I know that's going to be good. And I'm going to go watch that and give ROH my money, and we'll worry about the WWE after that, because I just don't have a lot of love or faith in their product. And I mean, it's everything. It's the CM Punk stuff. It's Vince McMahon's interview. It's just the lack of just interest I've had in the last two Raws. Like, the last two Monday Night Raws have been so uneventful.
I'm with you, man. And it's crazy how two podcasts, you know, one was which was endorsed by WWE, has overshadowed everything that we've seen as of late. Like, I can't honestly tell you what's closed Raw for the last, you know, probably like 4 or 5 weeks.
Some pointless tag match that no one cares about.
Like Cena and Ziggler versus Noble and Mercury and all that stuff.
It's always some pointless tag match that no one cares about.
Yeah, just like last week.
Yeah, it's like every single day it's the same thing.
Wouldn't be Monday Night Raw without a six-man tag team match, James.
Yeah, so the only other big news, I don't even know if it's big news, Heath Slater's in trouble with the law. Because of a thing that dates back 3 years to WrestleMania in Atlanta. Apparently has had a summons issued for his arrest in Atlanta.
Oh, he's done. This is a releasable offense, no?
Well, that's the thing. It's going to test that domestic abuse policy that was put in by one Stephanie McMahon.
Oh, was that what it was?
Well, let's backtrack. First and foremost, Heath Slater is alleged to have sexually assaulted a security guard at a hotel in Atlanta when he was highly intoxicated at some point during WrestleMania weekend in Atlanta back at WrestleMania 27. So that's what he's allegedly charged with. Stephanie, of course, brought in this domestic abuse policy based on what happened with Ray Rice and all that, WWE sticking with their corporate thing. So technically speaking, yeah, you're right. It could be a snap of the fingers and Heath Slater, you're done, you're fired, goodbye. That hasn't happened yet, but it could.
Even if he's not fully convicted, I feel like just the stigma of this whole situation is going to be enough for WWE to say, hey man, you know what, you have the stink of domestic abuse on you. It's over with. I mean, it's not like he's a main player on the roster anyway. Like, you can get rid of him and not really lose sight of it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he could easily disappear. Although, you know, a lot of those underling guys have been by the wayside of late. Like, Zack Ryder's out with his injury. You know, there's a few of them that are banged up and busted up. Bo Dallas, who, I hate to put Bo Dallas in that class, but the way they booked him, he kind of is. Yeah. Bo Dallas is injured, you know, a number of guys, so I don't know what the story will be there with Heath Slater. But yeah, it's just another thing where, you know, WWE, another problem, another day kind of thing. Like, this 2014 has not been their year.
The mid-card is getting depleted, and if you need any more proof of that, just know that you're getting another Rusev versus Jack Swagger feud because there's no one else to throw at him these days.
I mean, I don't even know. Like, I don't know where we're going with anything like these days. Like, we're supposed to be gearing up for the road to WrestleMania, and I'm like, this could possibly be one of the worst WrestleManias ever.
Yeah, if the main event stays the same, if we really do get Brock Lesnar versus Roman Reigns, two guys who have not been anywhere for the last year. Brock Lesnar's been the WWE champion, and he doesn't show up half the time, more than half the time, and Roman Reigns has been out with a hernia injury, and that could very well be the main event of WrestleMania. Although, I might be delusional in thinking this, I do have a very, very, very sleeperish pick to win the Royal Rumble, but maybe I should save that for another day.
Well, you can throw it out here now if you want.
Well, I mean, just with the way they've booked him as of late and the following that he's kind of conjured up, I wouldn't sell a Dolph Ziggler Royal Rumble win short.
To face Lesnar?
I think Lesnar would have to drop it before WrestleMania because he can't do Lesnar Ziggler.
Well, he could, really, but he's Ziggler not going to win.
Yeah, well,
he's going to bump around like a friggin' tennis ball and get killed.
That would be the ultimate bump fest from Dolph Ziggler, just to really put his bumping abilities at the forefront against a guy like Brock Lesnar who will toss him around like a rag doll for 30 minutes.
But let's be honest, Brock Lesnar, it's becoming more and more clear he's not coming back. Scott Coker, who runs Bellator, already is set. Yes, they're interested in Brock Lesnar. we are sitting here in like first week of December. His contract's not up till April. MMA world is already gearing up for a Brock Lesnar tug of war. And there's talk, the UFC has said, if Brock does come back into MMA, he can't even go to Bellator because he still has fights owing on his old UFC contract. So WWE is becoming out of the question, it would seem, for Brock Lesnar really quick.
Well, we'll get him at the Royal Rumble for sure against John Cena, I would think. If not, then he's definitely, I don't care who he fights at WrestleMania, he's dropping the belt to whoever it is.
Yeah, like, I mean, Brock's road ends there. That's my point. But but you're getting at the main event, but I'm even talking, like, more so. Like, when you start to fill out this card for WrestleMania, I mean, Sting, Triple H, I have no interest in. None. Zero. Well, nada.
Even not even from like a nostalgic purpose of just seeing Sting in a WrestleMania match? That doesn't do it for you?
No, I don't need to see Triple H carry around a 55-year-old guy with face paint. It doesn't do anything for me. There's no history between the two at all. Like, it's dumb. It's stupid. I'd rather see Ric Flair fight Sting at WrestleMania. I'm being honest.
Really?
At least, if you want nostalgia, there's your nostalgia.
That's really nostalgic.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, there's no reason for me to care about Sting and Triple H. And I mean, just because, obviously, they've made up one now with what happened at Survivor Series. But, I mean, realistically, this is a WWE-made thing. And I mean, it also speaks to me The Undertaker's not going to be at WrestleMania either.
No, I would bet against that, yeah.
Yeah, because I mean there have been hopeful people saying that we'll get Sting and Triple H at Royal Rumble, and then we get Undertaker and Sting at Mania, but I don't see that happening.
I don't even know what John Cena's going to do at WrestleMania at this
Rusev
point.
Rusev Crush!
Oh, don't even go there.
It's happening!
No, there's no way.
That's happening.
Oh.
That's happening.
Well, the only other match, I mean, if I had to run down the roster and say who could realistically fight Cena, I would say probably Rusev. I wouldn't. Maybe if Daniel Bryan comes back, they could do Bryan versus Cena, you think?
Yeah, or they could, like, the thing will be if they know Daniel Bryan's healthy or not and, like, have a window.
Yeah. Because
you could also do just as easily, and Daniel Bryan fans might not like this, but you could do Rusev Daniel Bryan.
Oh, well, I don't know if that'll work.
Why wouldn't it? It's the same thing.
Because I think if you have Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania, he has to win. And do you really
want
to beat Rusev?
I think you think John Cena is going to lose to Rusev at WrestleMania?
No, I think John Cena, you know, John Cena against anybody. If he was to end the streak, I would buy into that because I feel like WWE is going to have a rocket surgically attached to his buttocks for the rest of his career that he can literally go over everyone and no one is going to put up a fight. So if Cena beats Rusev, sure, it's realistic. It's John Cena. Daniel Bryan, you know, when he comes back, I would prefer for him not to lose to Rusev, but...
No, I'm saying he'll win. I'm saying Bryan wins against Rusev.
Yeah.
He's the guy to break the streak.
But I don't know if you want to go that route, though. It's the whole Rusev thing is just so confusing these days, you know?
Well, he is a babyface. I mean, let's face it.
To Europeans, yeah.
To Swiss people.
To
everybody.
We're behind Rusev on top of the mountain. We don't know his name. Rusev.
But in all honesty, he is the babyface. They book him like a babyface.
Why is that?
What? Lots of things. He's the United States champion, for example. What Daniel Bryan did to him was not fair. You make him recite the creed to another country? That's blasphemy. Or if he doesn't, then he's punished and he has to face 30 men in a battle royal?
It was such an obvious move for them to change the United States title and make it the European Championship again. I can't believe they didn't go that route.
Vince doesn't like you Europeans. Haven't you got that through your head?
He couldn't afford to put the Swiss flag on the side of the belt. And
no! No, you Swiss people are the problem.
We should be the solution, damn it.
Yeah, you know what I think? I think Vince had money in his Swiss bank account, and you Swiss people stole his money.
Well, why do you think I'm living so pretty now, buddy?
I don't know. But in all honesty, like when you start to put together a WrestleMania card, there's nothing that jumps off the page and I say, I got to see that.
Well, I mean, this is the first year in a long time where The Undertaker hasn't been on the card, and usually that's...
And The Rock's not going to be there.
Yeah, but I don't think Batista's going to be there either. He just signed on to be a new Bond villain, which is really cool. Good for him.
Stone Cold Steve Austin has said he has no interest in working a match.
No Steve Austin. So they really are banking on Sting being a huge draw.
And he's not going to be. Because here's the ultimate thing, and I heard someone else say this on another podcast, and it's so invariably true. Two podcasts have totally buried Sting. Who's talking about Sting? Nobody.
Yeah, nobody. Literally nobody.
Other than the woman who came up to CM Punk and said, oh, by the way, did you know that Sting's back?
Yeah.
And
true.
He told the woman he hasn't watched wrestling in 3 years.
The timing of his debut looks so bad in retrospect because it literally comes on the heels of these two extreme podcasts that have the wrestling world talking, and everyone's forgotten about Sting, and that it's not WWE's fault because no one knew when the CM Punk thing was going to happen, and then no one thought that the Austin podcast was going to turn out the way it did.
Well, I think it is WWE's fault, and there was no follow up.
Yeah, when he didn't show up on Raw, yeah,
or SmackDown, all that week.
Showed up on SmackDown.
Well, no, but you know what I'm saying. There was no follow-up about him at all.
Yeah.
And so they had dropped the ball, and then the ball just got absolutely kicked right into the other team's hands when those two podcasts came out because it made Sting irrelevant.
I think the only time they mentioned him on Raw was when Seth Rollins did that opening promo. He's like, who do I have to beat or something? And then he said Sting, and it got like a mild pop. And I'm like, oh, well, I guess that's the only acknowledgement we're going to get of that guy today. So, you know, that was the big, it was a huge story. It was picked up by like so many credible media outlets. And people thought, hey, maybe WWE's turning the corner here. They're finally giving the fans what they've been asking for so long, whether you like them or hate them. And they just blew it. They killed their own momentum. And now all we're talking about are two podcasts, so there you go.
Yeah, but I think it was already killed to a degree anyway, because I think what people that wanted to see Sting back, what they really want to see is Sting Undertaker, and they're not getting that.
Yeah.
Sting Hunter, no one cares about.
Because they know Triple H is only doing that because of the fact that Undertaker isn't around.
And in all honesty, they also know that, hey, let's face it, bottom line, you can think what you like about Triple H, but when push comes to shove, what happens when Triple H is in a big match at WrestleMania? He loses, because
yeah,
that's what he does. And so now you get Sting. There's no drama on if he'll win the match or not. He doesn't look good. I'm sorry. I don't know what people are talking about when they say he looks great. He doesn't. He looks terrible.
He needed to dye his hair, and I think that came because WWE basically flew him out at the last minute, and he didn't get a chance to kind of fix his look a bit. Like, he was looking all gray when he came out at Survivor Series. He didn't look like the Stinger that maybe fans wanted him to be. So hopefully the next time he shows up, he looks a little cleaner, a little bit more, you know, like he's ready to wrestle and not like the guy we got at Survivor Series.
Yeah, he didn't look good at all, and, you know, it's just...
But it's still Sting, though. Like, there's some that's important here. We can't overlook the fact that Sting, one of the biggest stars ever, having never appeared for WWE before. I really wish, you know, because everyone's on the internet these days. I really wish they wouldn't have shown him at these kind of like these cheesy panels
Comic-Cons
and press conferences and stuff. Yeah, they shouldn't have said anything. If we had not had any image of Sting prior to Survivor Series, I think that moment would have been a lot more special.
Yeah, but I don't know. You see, I look at it in a totally different way from everyone else. I see this as the ultimate betrayal to WCW.
Oh, come
and
on.
Vince McMahon getting to kind of laugh and say, look, I even got Sting to come on my program.
I think you're looking too much into it, James.
You don't think Vince McMahon gets his jollies about this?
No, I don't think so at all. I think the WCW era, or whatever you want to call it, that's over and done with. They bring it up on the network. That's all they need to do. Right now with Sting, I think it's just a matter of people want to see Sting, and he's one of the few guys that fans haven't gotten in forever. So why not bring him in and see if he can still draw? Because he was WCW. All these other guys, like the Hogans and the Savages of the world, they were WWE guys. Sting was WCW, and now that he's here, I think that's awesome. But they've handled it poorly so far.
I don't know. I know I'm in the vast minority on this one, but I just think Sting is it's Vince McMahon getting to put Dusty Rhodes in polka dots again.
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, I don't know. Like that's how I look at it, and I'm older, and I get that. But it's just, if I'm Sting, I don't want any part of this. I don't see the upside for Sting in this, other than one more big payday.
Would you be more accepting of Sting's return if he were to be? I mean, I don't know if he would put over a younger talent, but if he was heading into WrestleMania with a guy like Seth Rollins or Bray Wyatt, you know, someone that could really get the rub from this. Because obviously Triple H doesn't need to do this. He's doing it because Sting is so adamant that he fights someone from his era.
Yeah, I think what bothers me is the part-timer versus part-timer fact, and this goes back to some of the stuff CM Punk was talking about in his interview. You know, why do I need to see two part-timers fight in a match that, come Monday, isn't going to mean a damn thing?
It's an attraction, that's all it is.
Yeah, but I mean, like in advancing the storyline, and you're taking money out of your talent that work all year's pocket, I mean, I just don't care to see this stuff. It doesn't interest me. The Rock and Triple H doesn't interest me either.
But what other options right now does WWE have? Because they've shot themselves in the foot with their inability to build talent heading into WrestleMania, because as much as we love Dean Ambrose or Bray Wyatt or Seth Rollins, you can't feasibly put them in the main event of your biggest show of the year. You do need to bank on some of these nostalgia acts and these part-timers like Triple H and Sting to come in and kind of carry the load. And then, you know, you play sporadically throughout the rest of the card these young guys that, yeah, are getting screwed by, you know, the part-timers getting these big paychecks, but what else can you possibly get away with?
I don't know. I'm just saying, like, at some point, they've got to bite the bullet and accept that there is no more part-timers. There is no more Rocks to come save the day. There is no more Stone Colds. It's got to be about the guys that you have now.
And WWE isn't really the cool place to be anymore. I mean, they're not like what it was back in the Attitude Era where, you know, guys like me and you were getting really hardcore into it just because it was fun to be a wrestling fan. Now it's like you turn on Monday Night Raw and you sit through it for an hour and you're completely bored out of your mind, and no one's buying the wrestling t-shirts anymore and wearing them with pride. It's like, okay, wrestling's a thing. And I'm talking more so about WWE, not like these smaller companies, of course.
Yeah, well, look at the level of celebrities that they're attracting now. I mean,
really?
Seth Green is coming to host the Slammy Awards. Really? Like, Seth Green?
Yeah.
Like, that's what? B-list? C-list? I mean, other than The Rock, who is a huge celebrity they've had in the last 2 years on their program? And I can't think of any.
They've had Larry the Cable Guy. They had and Kathy Lee
from
the morning show. They had one of those Housewives of New York or Atlanta or something. These are really the worst of the worst. I bashed the Seth Green thing on Twitter, and people were like, oh, you're being a little harsh on the guy. You know, he does Robot Chicken, and he's the voice of Chris Griffin on Family Guy. And I'm like, you're kidding me, right? Like, this is supposed to be the host of WWE Monday Night Raw, and you're telling me he's important because he's the voice of a cartoon character?
I want the voice of Homer Simpson, damn it!
Yeah, was it Dan Castellaneta or something?
Or Cartman! I want Cartman!
Oh, man, give me some, like, YouTube personality or something while you're at it, you know?
Get me Eric Cartman host Raw. Like, get me something good.
Like, this is bad.
But no, in all seriousness, like when you compare, like, who they used to get routinely coming to their shows in the old days.
Yeah.
This is terrible.
Like Hugh Jackman wasn't, the coolest cat, but he was a credible actor. He was an Academy Award winner, Tony winner, and, that made headlines. No one's going to be reporting that Seth Green was the host of Raw.
Yeah, what's next? Is Brock Lesnar guy hosting Raw?
Yeah, seriously.
And no offense to Brock Lesnar guy or all these kind of super fans that have been made famous by Twitter, but really, is that the point we're getting to? Like, is Mick Foley's daughter going to be hosting Raw?
I have no complaints there.
Well, yeah.
That's a well host.
But you get what I'm saying. Like these are not, outside of the wrestling bubble, these people mean nothing.
They mean less than nothing. They're D-E-F-Z list celebrities. Like, they're the bottom of the barrel. But WWE is desperate right now because there's no authority anymore, so they're basically going to be bringing in these hosts from now until the foreseeable future, just because, unless they figure out who they want to be the main guy heading forward. And like CM Punk alluded to on his podcast, WWE has no long-term plans for anything.
Except for one person.
John Cena.
And, that makes you wonder, how do we end up getting the authority back? Because obviously that's where this is heading.
I've heard that people are under the impression that WWE wants to make Raw so bad that people are going to be begging for the authority to come back.
But that's what's going to end up happening. Like they have to. The storyline is set in stone that they have to come back.
Oh, yeah.
Back. My theory is that Sting comes and begs John Cena. Because if the authority isn't back, he can't get his match with Triple H. Right?
Yeah, they've said that Triple H is still a part of the company. He's just not.
He is, but he can't. He can't. But the way that's worded, he can't have any impact on any of the wrestlers' lives. So putting them in a match with him would have an impact on their lives, would it not?
Yeah, I think at WrestleMania it's probably going to be a stipulation with Sting and Triple H, where if Triple H wins, he gets his authority back. And maybe they'll swerve us and Triple H goes over Sting. You never know.
I don't know. But the point is, at some point, John Cena has to look like such a hypocrite to let the authority back.
Yeah, I don't know how they're going to get away with this. Maybe the authority never comes back. Maybe that whole era is over with.
Oh, no, they're coming back.
Or maybe Triple H just comes back in a different role. Maybe he's not the authority. Hell, the roster could use a little bit of a shake-up. Maybe he comes back as more of a full-time guy.
Oh, I don't know about that. I don't think that's happening either, but...
I'm thinking outside the box because Lord knows WWE won't friggin' do it.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just... there's such a lousy vibe about everything to do with, things with the WWE right now. And, people say, oh, it's the CM Punk stuff. No, it's really not. CM Punk just confirmed a lot of stuff that I think a lot of us already knew.
Yeah, the WWE is at fault for WWE being bad. Like, it's not, like you said, CM Punk acknowledged stuff that we've been talking about for the last year. But it's WWE's inability to make anyone care about their programming that's the big issue here.
Yeah, I think obviously the stuff Punk said about medically and the fact he was fired on his wedding day and all that, those things are the shocking things. And it wasn't shocking to me at all that he did not accept Vince's apology. I mean, Punk made a very good point. Vince has known just as long as him that those papers were sent out on the day that they were. Did Vince bother to call CM Punk up anytime between now and June? No, he waits to do it on his own television network as a PR stunt.
It came off that way. If you want to apologize to someone, you either, like Punk wanted, you either call him up or you show up to his house and do it face-to-face, because that seems genuine, not what Vince did.
Yeah, as he said, the WWE was 10 minutes away from his house, and that was in reference to the last time they were at the United Center and kind of bashed him into the ground. Vince was 10 minutes away, could have apologized then, didn't bother.
But I do feel that Vince McMahon is probably remorseful because I think he does want to work with CM Punk in the future, and CM Punk's stock right now is sky high. And when he does come back, he's going to be worth a lot of money to WWE. If Triple H was fully in control of this company, there's not a chance in hell that CM Punk would ever come back. I don't care about this whole, well, Bret Hart, you know, smooth fences, and so did Ultimate Warrior and all that stuff. CM Punk is more stubborn than both of those guys combined.
Yeah, Triple H is not going to welcome CM Punk back with open arms. Neither is Stephanie, for that matter. I mean, the bad blood between Hunter and CM Punk is one thing, but apparently there's just as much bad blood that exists between him and Stephanie, and it all makes you wonder. The one question that I still never have gotten it answered, all of this, how the heck is AJ Lee operating in this company? It's bizarre.
She'll be gone at the end of the year. I really do feel she'll be done.
Yeah, but how has she survived, like, even since then? Like, since that time in June when Punk was fired, or even when they found out the medical stuff with the staph infection and all that, how has this all been possible? That's the interview now. Like, to me, the next big wrestling interview, AJ Lee.
Yeah, I'd be interested to hear what she has to say. I think her passion for wrestling is far greater than what Punk's was over the last year. And
well, been in the business a lot less as well. Let's not forget that.
Yeah, I mean, she probably does want to be there, but even then, the WWE Divas division is such a joke, and she's basically run through everybody at this point, besides all of the girls who are. Who are down in NXT. So, you know, when she's done the TLC, which I figure will be a rematch with Nikki, there's really nothing else to do, unless she wants to stick around for a WrestleMania paycheck, which probably won't be that big anyway.
Punk and AJ versus Triple H and Stephanie, main event of WrestleMania, whatever number.
Oh my God, that would be cool, wouldn't it?
Could you imagine that? Could you imagine that, though? A mixed tag legitimately as a main event for WrestleMania. I think that actually could be. It'll never happen, but on paper, that certainly would be an interesting match.
Oh, my God. I'm looking at WWE.com right now, and I can confirm that the TLC pay-per-view is tables, ladders, chairs, ... and stairs.
Yeah, whatever.
Through this friggin' company.
Whatever, WWE. Like, nothing like screwing up your own marketing. Like, I don't know.
That's the longest bloody name for a pay-per-view I've ever seen.
Oh, no, I'm sure they can come up with something better.
What if there was a casket match? Would it be tables, ladders, chairs, and caskets?
Oh, my.
Oh, my.
Yeah, you gotta add the oh, my. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what's going on with the WWE, but, they got some troubles because, boy oh boy, this WrestleMania is looking awfully lean. And then the next WrestleMania, Cowboy Stadium. How on earth are you filling that?
They better come to some sort of agreement with Austin. I bet that's their only chance.
Well, you know, like they say, like, and Punk made this argument, and that was one of the things I disagreed with him on, that, you know, the brand WrestleMania sells itself, and I think it does for live attendance, but in terms of the pay-per-view or the network or whatever, it doesn't. Like, I think you need The Rock or the whatever, the big draw that is there. But Cowboy Stadium, we're talking over 100,000 people, man.
Cowboy Stadium is CM Punk, Austin, or bust. You need one of those two guys on that card.
You need something. Like, you need something massive.
Either that or you turn John Cena heel at WrestleMania 30.
Yeah, but you wouldn't know that heading
in. Yeah, but you can't advertise that. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, so that's not really a draw to get you there. You'd have to turn him heel at, like, the Royal Rumble or something, and that would be his first big whatever.
Yeah, but is even that enough these days?
I don't know. Like that's a massive amount of people. Like, that's like you need, like, that Hulk Andre match to do that.
You really do. Like, there's, like, nothing right now that can do that.
Yeah, like, WWE, when they went to the Silverdome, they knew they had it. Like, they knew they had the two matches that would fill that place. Because they had the match for all the casual people with Hulk and Andre, and they had Savage Steamboat for all the, like, smart fans. And, I mean, who are those two matches to fill Texas Stadium? I have no idea.
It's Punk Austin. That's the only match. But there's a 0% chance of that happening.
Yeah, but, and it seems like on both fronts it's getting much more, like, no way. Like, Austin doesn't seem to want any part of wrestling. And Punk clearly doesn't now as well. Like, it's just never. Like my match with CM Punk and the Young Bucks at PWG has a better chance of happening.
That's very true.
Well, it's actually Punk's match, but I am endorsing it because I think it would be awesome.
Like, when I think of, like, realistic big-time, big-money matches that they could do with that WrestleMania, you know, maybe like a Brock Lesnar versus Rock, or, you know, throw... Maybe
Brock's going to be gone, though.
No, like, I mean, you never know if he comes back and does, like, a one-time thing. We don't know about his UFC stuff. We're just talking hypothetically here.
I'm saying he's hypothetically gone, but go ahead.
All right. Okay, well, then maybe, like, a Triple H or a Sting still around. None of those guys, you know, at that point will be able to fill Cowboy Stadium. It's Austin and Punk, and that's it.
Yeah, I mean, or some kind of Taker retirement match, maybe.
Yeah, but dude, I mean, at that point, will fans really care? Because at that point, he'll have been gone for 2 years. He's basically retired by then.
Yeah, and he looked so bad too.
And why are people so adamant about him getting a retirement match? Like, what? Austin never got a retirement match. He unofficially did.
Like within inside the company, everyone knew that was his last match.
Yeah, but as soon as we knew the Undertaker streak was over, that signifies the end. And he got his ovation and he walked to the back. I don't think he's the kind of guy that desperately desires some sort of adulation or final bow out to the
WWE. Oh no, this is the WWE trying to cash in on it.
Yeah,
make no mistake about it. Mark Calaway doesn't need this.
He doesn't care.
I don't think he does. Like to the point of coming back and doing another match. I don't think he needs it.
He'll be Hall of Fame, and that'll be his send off.
Yeah, but again, that's not filling Texas Stadium. That'll sell out your Hall of Fame wherever you do that.
Is there any chance? I mean, because in Cowboy Stadium, that would seem like the perfect time to induct Undertaker, but when Vince McMahon did the podcast and he beat around the bush with Savage and said it might be this year, might be next year, we don't really know, is there any chance Undertaker gets inducted in 2015?
Possibly, but again, that's not a draw for your WrestleMania, really. It's just a draw for the Hall of Fame.
Well, he will make an appearance at WrestleMania, if only for that.
Yeah, I don't know, it's weird. Like, WWE's rapidly going into uncharted ground with a lot of things. And they got to start having faith in these young guys. That's the bottom line.
Big Red Rowan, baby.
Like, well, maybe not necessarily him. Although, I have to admit, I'm totally blown away with what they've been able to do with him. Because I thought he was dead as a doornail when the Wyatts broke up, but they have proven me wrong in that respect. But all these young guys, they've got to let them loose in the next year.
The Shield guys, the Bray Wyatt, Harper, Rowan.
Even who's down in NXT.
Yeah.
We need to start seeing Sami Zayn and Adrian Neville and Kenta and Balor now, Prince Devitt. And Kevin Owens, Steen, all these guys got to be like part of the mix. It's got to happen sooner rather than later because they really need them. Like Vince McMahon admitted, their roster is totally depleted at this point.
And Sami Zayn and Adrian Neville have been down in NXT for forever and a half. And if there's ever a time to bring them up, I feel like either one or both of them will make their debut at the Royal Rumble because there's always some NXT guy who shows up. It was Bo Dallas 1 year, it was Rusev. I think Neville would be the obvious choice because I do feel he'll drop the belt to Zayn.
Yeah, but that's never been a successful spot to debut them either.
Well, why so? Because Rusev turned out okay.
Well, not really, because he really went and disappeared and came back again, if you think about it. Like, well, he did come out and do that Rumble, but then we never saw him for about 4 weeks after that.
Okay, well, maybe they, I guess they, because if you debut him at the Royal Rumble and then you have him compete on television for several weeks, unless you're putting him in some multi-tag team match or like a Money in the Bank return, I mean, you're not going to give him a singles match in WrestleMania. So I guess they just played it safe and said, we'll give him something to do the night after.
Yeah, but no, too, Bo Dallas, that was his first debut, and that was horrible.
Well, it's because his character was complete crap, and no one cared.
Yeah. So, you know, actually, Bo should be, like, a couple weeks away from returning.
He could be a Royal Rumble guy.
You got a Bo Leaf. Oh, he'd definitely be a Royal Rumble guy.
Yeah, I hope so.
I mean, he's due back Christmas or around there.
Yeah, same with Barrett. He's coming back, and Roman Reigns, and you never know when Daniel Bryan will show up again. So at least the roster's getting a little bit healthy at the most important time of the year.
Yeah, but it leaves so many question marks. And Daniel Bryan, I'm not even sure if he's healthy. Like I don't know what's going on there.
He looked good on Raw, but again, he didn't do anything. He just talked.
Yeah, he's standing around in a shirt. I'm sure he could look fine. But, you know, actually wrestling... And one of the things, and we've gone way over time in talking about all this stuff, but one of the things I think we'll close up with, Daniel Bryan, when he comes back, he can't be the same guy. And we've talked about this before, but his style has to change immensely.
Big time. No more dives through the ropes, no headbutts. If he wants to preserve his career and his life, for that matter, he needs to play it safe a lot more.
So. And over the long term, can he stay over with that?
I think so. I think he's versatile as a wrestler, and I've talked about this before, where he can alter his moveset drastically and still be over. He could still do the running knee to an extent. He still has the yes chant, which is always going to be over, so I think he'll be fine.
I don't know. It's tough times for the WWE, and we will see what happens. Maybe the next Stone Cold Steve Austin podcast will be the next biggest draw. A sit down with the Levesques. Could you imagine?
Oh, disaster. Austin's going to poke at Triple H until he gets the answers he wants.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, really, that's the interview, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess so.
I mean, they're not going to do the AJ Lee interview because obviously she's going to support her husband, the one that I want to hear.
I would love to see Austin do one once a month on the network, though, because the Vince is amazing.
Or even once every couple months, whatever he wants to do with his schedule. But I agree, I think it's a tremendous draw because Austin, to his credit, has become a tremendous interviewer.
Yeah.
Like, he really has. He's fearless in doing these things, and he isn't afraid to ask anybody anything, and he isn't afraid to put his own opinion in there as well.
So if you haven't checked it out, hit up the network, because say what you will about the whole WWE network thing, the Vince McMahon interview is worth it. So do yourself a favor, folks.
So that's worth $9.99 to you, really?
For 1 month? Yeah, I think so. If they can continue putting out exclusive content like that, that might even entice me, but probably not.
Yeah, I don't think that alone is $9.99 worthy.
Yeah.
But especially when Austin's doing them for free the rest of the month.
Yeah, exactly. Good point, yeah.
So anyway, with all that said, we are done for the week. Go and check out ROH's Final Battle. Do yourself a favor. As they have put it, they still do professional wrestling, unlike that sports entertainment company.
The cream of the crop. Nobody does it better. More questions.
I'm sorry about that.
Goodbye.